You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Cyril, the daring sea lion, embarked on an epic escape from a London, Ontario zoo in 1958, setting his sights on the vast Atlantic Ocean. His incredible journey left everyone wondering, could he survive the challenges that lie ahead? Would he make it to Niagara Falls? And even if he did, how would he get over the falls? This captivating tale held readers on both sides of the border spellbound and even sparked a minor international incident over which country would ultimately claim Cyril as their own. It's a fantastic true story, so don't go anywhere. I am Steve Silverman, and this is the Useless Information Podcast.
Useless Information.
Hi everyone, it's hard to believe that Christmas is once again right around the corner. Now you may recall that I interviewed Pamela McCall, who penned the book Twas the Night, The Art and History of the Classic Christmas Poem, back in podcast number 185. And if you've never listened to that episode, I encourage you to go back and do so, because judging by the positive feedback I received after our discussion, it's definitely worth your time. And I have to say that the book is truly outstanding. It not only boasts extensive research, but it also features an impressive collection of over 200 captivating images. Whenever I pick up this book, I am just awed by its sheer visual beauty. And here's a little hint. It would make the perfect Christmas gift for those who love the poem. Well, this Christmas season marks another significant milestone for the poem. That's because it made its debut in the Troy Sentinel on December 23rd of 1823, published anonymously. This marked the very first time that the general public could read it, and its popularity quickly soared from there. And in honor of that first ever publication of the poem, I am holding a contest with the prize being a signed copy of Pamela's book. And rest assured, this is not the copy that I purchased, read, and wrote notes all over. It's a pristine, unread book generously donated by Pamela herself. So, you're probably wondering, how do you enter this contest? All you need to do is go to my website at uselessinformation.org, and the top post will guide you to the Google form that I've set up for the contest. Now, just a few things to keep in mind. First, I only have one copy of the book, so there won't be multiple prizes. Also, due to the high cost of shipping, the contest is only available to those with mailing addresses within the United States. Unfortunately, international mail has just become too costly. I'll also be sending the book via Media Mail, aka Bookrate, so my hope is that the winner will receive it by Christmas, but there's no guarantee. I am limiting it to one entry per person, so if you want to put your name in 75 times, I'm going to delete 74 of them. On the other hand, if there are six people in your household, feel free to submit an entry for all of them. The contest will end on Friday, December 8th of 2023, and then I'm just going to use a random number generator to pick the winner. But one more thing, the form does ask for your address and other information. I mean, how else am I going to get this to you? But please be assured that I'm not going to share that with anyone ever. Okay, enough of the contest rules. Let's get on with today's main story. If I were to mention that today's story unfolds on the Thames River in London, you might naturally assume that it took place in England. I mean, that would certainly be my first thought. But I have to tell you, both you and I would be wrong. Instead, the setting is an entire ocean away on the Thames River in London, Ontario. And I hope everyone realizes that's in Canada. It was there in 1958 that the city unveiled Storybook Gardens, a captivating theme park set right inside their Springbank Park. This whimsical enclave within the larger park was a true wonder, and it featured structures, characters, and creatures that were plucked right out of beloved children's stories. For instance, you could find Old MacDonald's farm complete with a barn and live farm animals. Then there was the abode of the Big Bad Wolf, where three real live piglets played under the watchful gaze of a fierce wolf statue. And from the Goldilocks story, the three bears had their home in the gardens complete with, you guessed it, a trio of live bear cubs. And along with amusement rides, refreshment stands, and the typical park offerings, Storybook Gardens was a combination zoo, park, and entertainment center all in one place. Well, on Monday, June 16th, 1958, the park welcomed its latest additions. Those were two California sea lions, Zilophus californianus, and they were named Cyril and Lonesome. These playful sea lions were just 1 year old at the time. However, a minor hiccup occurred, and that is that the sea lions arrived a day earlier than expected, and the construction of their pool, well, let's just say it wasn't quite finished yet. Now, animals possess an uncanny knack for discovering even the smallest imperfections in their enclosures. And having spent years working in my parents' pet shop when I was younger, I can attest that animals have an amazing ability to discover any means of escape. I could recount numerous incidents involving fish, birds, snakes, hamsters, gerbils, mice, and so on that somehow managed to break free within their store. If only the customers had known what was running loose in the store. Well, it's kind of the same thing at a zoo, but typically on a much larger scale. You know, escape might involve leaping off an enclosure roof, bounding over a moat, or, in Cyril's case, slipping beneath an unfinished fence. And as soon as Cyril was free, he made a beeline for the nearby Thames River, a mere 200 yards or 183 meters away. By 8 a.m. the following morning, Cyril had vanished, leaving poor Lonesome feeling truly lonesome. The staff at the London Public Utilities Commission, that's the park operator, swiftly took to the river in a motorboat. Equipped with nets and a wire crate, they were ready to retrieve Cyril, that is, if they managed to catch him. Unfortunately, sea lions are highly skilled swimmers, and Cyril had vanished into the water, leaving the story far from its conclusion. Let's face it, if they had caught him, there would be absolutely nothing left for me to tell. Little hope remained for Cyril's return. Firstly, he needed a saltwater environment to thrive long term, and this necessitated a challenging journey to reach the Atlantic Ocean. This arduous route involved navigating the winding Thames River to Lake St. Clair, which is sometimes referred to as the Sixth Great Lake, then traversing the entire Detroit River, crossing Lake Erie, finding a way around Niagara Falls, then crossing Lake Ontario, swimming the full length of the St. Lawrence Seaway with its canal locks, then passing by Montreal and Quebec City, and finally reaching the open ocean. And even if he miraculously reached the Atlantic, he'd still be thousands of miles from his native Pacific habitat. In addition to these daunting challenges, experts from California had warned park officials that sea lions required saltwater to maintain their eye health. They estimated if Cyril spent more than a month in freshwater, he faced a significant risk of going blind. In simple terms, the odds of his survival were exceedingly slim at best. A.L. Ferrana, who was the assistant general manager of the Public Utilities Commission, told the press, quote, "We've probably seen the last of the sea lion," unquote. He added that they would promptly order a replacement sea lion from the California Ocean Aquarium. The cost would mirror that of acquiring Cyril. That was $150 plus an additional $60 for shipping. That's equivalent to approximately $2,200 today in total. The anticipated delivery time was around 2 weeks. Nonetheless, they remained determined to capture Cyril. Ferrana reached out to California for guidance on handling an elusive sea lion. As Ferrana explained, quote, The best approach is to scare it. If you yell boo at it long enough, it's supposed to crawl up on the land and lie on its back whimpering, unquote. With Cyril confined within the banks of the Thames, many reported seeing him as he made his way southwest toward Lake St. Clair. Estimates place the speed at approximately 15 miles per hour or 24.1 kilometers per hour, so he really was trucking along. He was first spotted in Delaware, then Melbourne, and then in Wardsville. When Cyril reached Chatham, hundreds of people gathered along the shoreline to watch him swim by. Cyril's journey along the Thames proved to be quite popular with the public. Updates to his story appeared in newspapers both in Canada and in the United States daily. The London Free Press offered a $200 reward for the capture of Cyril, that's about $2,000 in today's money, while the Toronto Star offered $100, or about $1,000 today, for the best picture turned over to the paper. There were various attempts by zoo officials to capture Cyril, but none were successful. They even went as far as broadcasting recorded grunts and honks of another sea lion, you know, hoping that this might entice him within capture range, but that also failed. Let's face it, Cyril wasn't letting up for a second. He just kept going. A mere 2 days after his escape, Cyril successfully covered the 85-mile or 137-kilometer journey to the river's end, and then he ventured out into the open waters of Lake St. Clair. Ernest Aguette, a 41-year-old auto dealer from nearby Tilbury, spotted Cyril romping in the waves of the lake not far from the mouth of the Thames. Quote, "It looked like somebody swimming, then it went under and flopped up again. It was going fast, and I thought nobody swims like that." He added, "I thought it was a seal and wondered where on earth it came from, but there it was. We were about 100 feet away from it as it swam into the lake and headed for open water." 100 feet is about 30.5 meters away. And by the next day, Cyril was spotted in the Detroit River, which connects Lake St. Clair to Lake Erie in the south. Frank McInnes, Detroit Zoo director, felt that the only way Cyril could be recaptured was if he were to become tired and confused, at which point he'd go ashore and he could be netted. Sadly, McInnes felt that Cyril would be unable to find the proper diet and would ultimately die from starvation. On the other hand, he pointed out that both Lake St. Clair and Lake Erie have herring, which happens to be a favorite of sea lions. I'll keep that in mind the next time I'm going to capture one.
Want to learn how you can make smarter decisions with your money? Well, I've got the podcast for you. I'm Sean Piles, and I host NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. On our show, we help listeners like you make the most of your finances. I sit down with NerdWallet's team of nerds, personal finance experts in credit cards, banking, investing, and more. We answer your real-world money questions and break down the latest personal finance news. The Nerds will give you the clarity you need by cutting through the clutter and misinformation in today's world of personal finance. We don't promote get-rich-quick schemes or hype unrealistic side hustles. Instead, we offer practical knowledge that you can apply in your everyday life. You'll learn about strategies to help you build your wealth, invest wisely, shop for financial products, and plan for major life events. And you'll walk away with the confidence you need to ensure that your money is always working as hard as you are. So turn to the nerds to answer your real-world money questions and get insights that can help you make the smartest financial decisions for your life. Listen to NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Cyril did successfully make it through the Detroit River and into Lake Erie. He was now an estimated 250 miles or 400 kilometers from London, Ontario, but he had slowed down a bit. He was now traveling at about half his original speed. But then he took a wrong turn. You see, he needed to head east toward the Atlantic, but instead, he went southward in the lake for a while before turning westward into the Maumee River in Toledo, Ohio on Friday of June 20th. It was Phil Skeldon, the director of the Toledo Zoo, who got the call about Cyril. He admitted that when a coal dock worker contacted the zoo to report a sea lion sighting in their river, he was initially doubtful. And that's because the zoo routinely received calls from individuals who claimed to have spotted various creatures. Nevertheless, he consulted with the police and within 10 minutes he confirmed the presence of the sea lion. After sitting out on the water, Skeldon and his crew eventually sighted Cyril, but their attempts to apprehend him were unsuccessful. Cyril would surface in one location, only to swiftly dive beneath the water as they drew near. Suddenly, he'd reappear to their left, right, in front of, or behind them. Skeldon recounted to the press the next day, quote, "We followed him for about 6 miles. We didn't catch him, but we got within 15 feet of him. That's about 4.6 meters. He was very friendly. He rolled on his back and looked at us, dived under the boat, and came alongside," end quote. Cyril then left them and headed upstream toward Fort Wayne, Indiana, but Skeldon was nearly certain that the sea lion would never get there. Quote, "At Maumee, 10 miles from here, there's shallow water and a series of rapids. I think Cyril will turn around and head back," unquote. And just in case he was spotted again, Skeldon and his team began preparations to capture Cyril. He told reporters that the next time, quote, "We might just use a gun. That's an air gun. Well, it's powered by gas, actually, which fires an aluminum syringe. You give them a shot of tranquilizer," unquote. The chosen tranquilizer was a combination of nicotine and pentothal, which had been prepared by the Toledo Zoo veterinarian. However, there was an inherent risk associated with using this tranquilizer. It had a tendency to induce paralysis in its target, potentially causing the animal to sink to the bottom of the water. Skeldon speculated, quote, "In shallow water it might just work, but in deeper water she might go down and not come up," unquote. It's worth noting that Skeldon referred to Cyril as she and not he. This was due to the uncertainty surrounding Cyril's gender at that time. You see, Cyril had only been in the custody of Storybook Gardens for a few hours before making a getaway, and his or her gender had not been definitively determined. Skeldon also dismissed the notion that fresh water would lead to the animal's blindness. Quote, "We keep ours in fresh water all the time. Sometimes they develop a little minor eye trouble, but nothing serious," unquote. There were absolutely no reports of Cyril being spotted anywhere on Saturday, June 21st, and the same was true for Sunday and Monday. Skeldon speculated, quote, "After the way he played around with us on Friday, I wouldn't be surprised if Cyril had backtracked and is headed toward Niagara," end quote. As Tuesday rolled around, now this is 1 week after his escape, there was still no sign of Cyril. But as dusk rolled around, Harry Rose decided to go fishing for catfish on the Portage River in Port Clinton, Ohio, which lies approximately 35 miles or 56 kilometers southeast of Toledo. Quote, "I was fishing when I saw something swimming across the river. I thought at first two other fellows who were fishing near me had a dog with them. It would swim 8 or 10 feet on top, then go under for 8 or 10 feet, then come back on top again. It was only about 100 feet from me. Then I realized it might be the sea lion. I couldn't see what else it could be. It swam across the river and out of sight," unquote. Harry immediately called the local sheriff, who wisely opted to call Phil Skeldon, and he had a plan. Recognizing that the river was quite shallow where it emptied into Lake Erie, he instructed the sheriff to have nets extended across the mouth of the river, which would effectively trap Cyril. He may try swimming upstream, but then he would encounter rapids and be forced back down towards Lake Erie. On Wednesday, June 25th of 1958, a tornado made landfall in LaSalle, Ontario, which lies approximately 7 miles or 11 kilometers to the southwest of Windsor. Resident Richard Amlin heard that a search was underway for two boys believed to have been aboard an overturned boat. As Amlin launched his own boat out into the Detroit River to help with the search, he spotted Cyril. Quote, "When I got the boat into the water, I saw a black fuzzy head looking at me. I'm sure it was Cyril because he seemed to have a cute grin on his face. He swam about 50 feet from my boat, that's about 15.2 meters, then ducked under the water. All I saw was his tail, then he appeared in the middle of the river," end quote. Cyril frolicked around Amlin's boat for approximately 5 minutes before eventually swimming in the direction of Windsor. As the crow flies, Cyril was now over 50 miles or 80 kilometers away from the area where Phil Skeldon and his team had been conducting their search. But as we know, Cyril was not known for being predictable. He turned around and went farther south than he had ever been on Lake Erie before. Then Thursday at around 4:30 p.m., Cyril was spotted sunning himself on a large raft in Sandusky Bay in Ohio. So would Skeldon finally catch the sea lion? Well, as his boat pulled in close to Cyril, he fired his first shot. The tranquilizer dart hit Cyril in the shoulder, and he immediately dived into the water. As soon as he came back to the surface, two boats moved in. Cyril was lying on his back, apparently stunned by the shot. And just as they reached out to put Cyril in a cage, he suddenly got a burst of energy and dived back under the water again. The chase was on. Over the next 2 hours, with an estimated 200 spectators observing from the shore, a tense game of hide-and-seek unfolded. Despite their best efforts, Skeldon and his team were unable to capture Cyril. Frustrated, Skeldon fired a second dart into Cyril's thick hide. As nightfall loomed, they guided the boat toward the shoreline to retrieve a portable lighting unit from the Sandusky Fire Department. However, just as they were about to resume their search, their boat encountered engine difficulties, and that forced them to abandon the mission for the night. Cyril had once again evaded capture. But of course, a drugged-out sea lion is not going to get very far. And sure enough, the next morning, Cyril was spotted by fishermen resting inside of a nearby boathouse, and they kept him cornered until help arrived from the Toledo Zoo. Dan Danford, the zoo's curator of mammals, he skillfully looped a noose over Cyril's head. Together with Skeldon, they guided him into a cage and secured the door. A short while later, they loaded the cage into a station wagon and transported Cyril to the Toledo Zoo for proper care. In the 10 days since his escape, it was estimated that Cyril had traveled a minimum of 400 miles or 645 kilometers. Within hours of his capture, the Toronto Star arranged for a chartered plane to transport two officials from the London Public Utilities Commission, in addition to a reporter and a photographer from the paper, down to Toledo to arrange for Cyril's return home. But after a meeting with Phil Skeldon at the Toledo Zoo, the commissioners returned to London Friday evening with their mission unaccomplished. And there were two reasons for this. The first was that Cyril was in no condition to be transported. After a thorough examination by Dr. Carl Johnson, the veterinarian at the Toledo Zoo, the assessment was clear, quote, "He just can't be moved. He is covered with sores. He is sick and sad. He will be happy here," end quote. But the real problem was that Skeldon was now claiming ownership of Cyril, quote, "I really didn't give it much thought at first, but started thinking about it on the way home after it was caught. It's my understanding that there's an old, very old law that when an animal escapes from a zoo, it belongs to whomever captures it," unquote. He also felt that once Cyril left the Thames River, the Public Utilities Commission gave up their search for him. He was considered lost, and they even went as far as ordering a new sea lion from California. Skeldon said, quote, "I think our zoo has some claim to this animal, legal or moral. After all, as I understand it, you people abandoned him. We went to some trouble to catch him," unquote. Meanwhile, the attendance at the Toledo Zoo skyrocketed with the news of Cyril's capture. They were charging each person 50 cents to see him. That's about $5.30 today, although children could do so for free. The reality was that the Toledo Zoo had stumbled into a major moneymaker, and they weren't about to give it up. But was it really finders, keepers, losers, weepers? I mean, who had the right to Cyril? Was it the park in London that purchased him but ultimately lost him? Or was it the Toledo Zoo who dedicated significant resources and time in an effort to capture him? A minor international incident between Canada and the United States was brewing. Ohio Governor C. William O'Neill was questioned about his opinion on the matter, but he opted to take a hands-off approach for the time being. Detective Captain Robert W. Traver, who directed the Sandusky Police Department during Cyril's capture, was surprised by Skeldon's decision. Quote, "We could have called the Cleveland Zoo officials or waited for London Zoo personnel to fly to Sandusky. We assumed that the Toledo Zoo officials were just as interested in returning the animal to London as we were." Unquote. Needless to say, the citizens of London were outraged. Waitress Sherry Orman took it upon herself to raise the funds needed to repurchase Cyril. Just one day after his capture, she set off for Toledo with both the $150 that she had collected, remember that was his purchase price, and a petition that was signed by 125 London residents, all of whom are requesting Cyril's return.
Hey there, I'm Dylan Lewis, one of the hosts of Motley Fool Money. Each weekday on Motley Fool Money, we talk through the business news you need to know and the stories moving stocks on Wall Street. On weekends, we dive into the industries shaping tomorrow and host the experts, authors, and executives that understand them. Tune in for insights, a long-term perspective on investing, and of course, stock ideas, plenty of them. To quote a listener, it pays to listen. Check us out and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Now, I'm betting that you think that sea lions cannot speak. Well, I'm here to prove to you that you are totally wrong. That's because Toronto Star Ace reporter Jack Gale managed to get an exclusive interview with Cyril. And here's just a portion of what Cyril had to say. Quote, "Put it this way. They tried to make a monkey out of me, a sea lion. They called me a seal. So I left." He continued, "I'm not much more than a year old. Why, in your lingo, I'm barely out of my teens. So what happens? I get captured, thrown in with this good-looking babe, and shipped to London. Me, Cyril, toughest kid on the beach, get married and settled down? I wasn't ready. And once someone at Storybook Gardens called me a seal, that was the last straw." Gale then began to ask him what the difference was between a sea lion and a seal, but Cyril seemed annoyed and cut him off with a wave of his flipper. Quote, "I don't know why I should go on with this. It's obvious you're like the rest, ignorant. You're the only one left, so I'll tell you. A seal has no ears. A sea lion has. Anyone with eyes can see I have ears. Ergo, I'm not a seal." After he took a sip of water from a nearby hose, Cyril went on. "As a sea lion, I have a certain reputation to uphold. We are bold and adventuresome. We're not the Marian kind. We like to live it up, and from where I lounged up in London, far away seas looked greener." Then he told of how he left. "I told Lonesome, that's my wife, I'd be back. I told her I was just stepping out for a breath of salty air. But I was really going to investigate these things called Canadians. After all, I was going to have to change my citizenship and everything. I had a right to know. But the Canadians fooled me. I no sooner got my whiskers in your Thames River, remember I'd never been in a river before, when I discovered the thing only had a one-way current. There was no way for me to go but away. I tried to fight it, but I couldn't. I remember rounding the faraway bend and hearing Lonesome call. Or was it that tape recording they made of her voice? But I was too beat to answer. I couldn't even bark. When I got to Lake St. Clair, I could see the lights of Windsor and Detroit. That's for me, I thought. But when I got into the Detroit River, there was a one-way current too. I was stumped again. I just had to keep going." And the interview continues from there, but you get the general idea. Meanwhile, a stalemate over which zoo would get to keep Cyril went on. Attendance at the Toledo Zoo continued to soar. For example, on Sunday, June 29th, 23,000 people visited the zoo. Prior Sunday attendances had never exceeded 13,000. Cyril the sea lion was perhaps the biggest crowd getter in the history of the zoo up until that point. Phil Skeldon faced swift and overwhelming backlash for his decision. He found himself inundated with telegrams and phone calls, many of which accused him of kidnapping. Moreover, the media coverage was far from favorable, which of course put the Toledo Zoo in a negative light. In response to this mounting pressure, on Saturday, June 28th of 1958, that's maybe 24 to 36 hours after they caught him, Skeldon caved in and consented to return Cyril as soon as he was well enough. And as an added bonus, the Toledo Zoo would toss in a two-month-old puma named Lucky. But Skeldon insisted on keeping Cyril, who had now taken on the moniker of Slippery the Sea Lion in the press, through the July 4th Independence Day holiday. And clearly that was being done to maximize profits at the zoo. On July 5th of 1958, London Mayor Alan Johnson issued a lengthy proclamation that concluded with, quote, "Therefore, by virtue of the authority vested in me by the said council, I declare Sunday, July 6th to be Cyril Day in London, and call upon all citizens to attend the welcoming parade at approximately 4 o'clock in the afternoon," unquote. And sure enough, Sunday morning, a procession of 6 cars traveled from the Toledo Zoo to the Ambassador Bridge in Detroit. Crossing the Detroit River, they entered Windsor, Ontario, marking Cyril's return to Canadian soil. It was in Windsor that Skeldon formally handed Cyril over to a group of dignitaries from the London Public Utilities Commission. Skeldon's exact words were, quote, "He's all yours," unquote. To which Elmo Curtis, chairman of the commission, replied, quote, "We are happy to have him back, and we thank Mr. Skeldon and the Toledo folks who made his return trip possible. Incidentally, we fixed that fence just to make sure, because the next time, we might not get him back," unquote. Now, before telling you about the parade, I just want to mention that there is footage of it on YouTube, and I'll place a link to that on my website if you'd like to view it. That's uselessinformation.org. But I also should mention that it was filmed in black and white and is mostly silent. But by knowing the story beforehand, you should have no problem figuring out what is going on. In the film, there's a Jeep utility wagon with a large banner affixed to its side. It reads, quote, "Hello, London! Toledo Zoo returning London's wandering sea lion, Cyril," unquote. Now, the rear hatch of the vehicle is wide open, and that allowed onlookers to easily see the cage that was holding Cyril. In a side window of that same vehicle is a small sign that reads, quote, "Have flippers, will travel. Cyril, the wandering sea lion, heads back to London, Ontario from Ohio Zoo via Jeep utility wagon after a 400-mile swim," unquote. As police cars escort Cyril home, a young girl can be seen holding up a handwritten sign that says, "Welcome home, Slippery and Lucky." Then there was a convertible with a sign on its side that reads, "The JC's Welcome Home, Slippery." Even Lucky, the baby puma, can be seen in the film. It was on a leash, and I have to say it looked very unhappy with so many kids trying to pet it. So you may be wondering just how successful was this parade. It was estimated that approximately 50,000 people cheered Cyril on as he made his way along the parade route. According to the website MacroTrends, that's where I check for some data, the population of London was 164,000 in 1958. Basically, that means that one out of every 3 people attended the parade. It clearly was a huge celebration. That evening at a welcome home gala, Mayor Johnson presented Phil Skeldon with a framed photo of Cyril, and that can be seen in the video. In exchange, Skeldon presented the mayor and Cyril with the keys to the city of Toledo. There were clearly no hard feelings between the two. And after this, Cyril's name would no longer be used. He now simply was referred to as Slippery the Sea Lion, although many articles continue to mistakenly refer to him as Slippery the Seal. Slippery quickly became the star attraction at Storybook Gardens. A prominent sign was installed beside the sea lion enclosure recounting his daring escape, while his likeness was used to sell a lot of merchandise. But no one lives forever, and that includes sea lions. On January 11th of 1967, officials at Storybook Gardens announced that Slippery had passed away at an undetermined age. But we're smarter than that. We can do some math and calculate that he was around 10 years of age. Within that same YouTube video, a scene unfolds where 4 men are observed carrying a large coffin-like container. This solemn moment appears to be Slippery's funeral, although I can't be certain of that. In attendance are several dignitaries, with one official prominently displaying a telegram to the camera. Although the text is challenging to discern, only one half of each line is legible, it is clear that the telegram was sent by Phil Skeldon at the Toledo Zoo, and it alludes to something concerning Slippery's escape. Now, we do know that he passed away in January, and the landscape can be seen blanketed in snow, and then there's an ice sculpture resembling a sea lion in the video. And just like your typical human funeral, the box is carefully lowered by ropes into the ground. Also in the camera footage, there's a moment when a statue commemorating Slippery is unveiled. Today, Storybook Gardens no longer houses live animals, and the sea lion pool well that is long gone. As a result, a statue has been relocated just beyond the park's entrance, where it overlooks a pool of water. However, based on what I read, there's no accompanying signage to explain the significance of the statue. So the question arises, do the present-day young visitors know the story of Slippery the Sea Lion? I really doubt it, but maybe they should. Useless, useful, I'll leave that for you to decide. Before I bring this episode to a close, just a reminder to go to my website, that's uselessinformation.org, and there you can enter the contest to win a copy of Pamela McCall's book, Twas the Night, The Art and History of the Classic Christmas Poem. You have until midnight New York time on Friday of December 8th to do so, and I have marked my calendar to pick a winner that weekend. There are links on that contest page to the Amazon listing for Pamela's book, to the interview that I recorded with her last Christmas, as well as, of course, to the contest entry form itself. Again, the book is spectacular, so I encourage you to check it out. Well, I hope you enjoyed this story on Cyril the Sea Lion. I don't recall where I first came across it. After I finished the last full-length podcast, I started looking at various ideas for this episode. I rejected story after story until I came across this one in my pile of research material, and of all the stories I've done over the past year, this was not only the easiest to write, but it was also the most enjoyable. Just a reminder that you can find the Useless Information podcast wherever you get your podcasts, so be sure to subscribe. The Useless Information Podcast is part of the Airwave Media Podcast Network, so be sure to visit airwavemedia.com, where you will find a curated selection of some of the best podcasts out there. Anyway, thanks for listening, and take care, everyone. Bye.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Neil.
And I'm Ken.
And we are from the Triviality Podcast, a pub trivia-style game show where a lack of seriousness meets a little bit of knowledge.
Join us each week for an hour-long game of general knowledge trivia featuring special guests from around the world, plus tons of extra themed episodes.
If you want to improve your trivia game,
or you just want to scream at us in your car when we get easy questions wrong,
then we're the show for you. Find Triviality on all your favorite podcast apps.
But you know that, because you're already listening to a podcast.